Well, listen, today we've got a remarkable guest. Steve, are you on?
Yes, I'm on.
Great. Now, Steve Coleman, our guest for today, because Steve is an old hand in the whole Ormus network, and Steve has been making Ormus for quite some time by the wet method, by burn method, and by a few other methods.
The first time being the man of the moment on a conference. But, okay, well, if we start when I first started making and using it, for myself, the dream state started to become more vivid, and you would basically, it seems that, things would seem more real than life itself sometimes when you're dreaming. And as time went on, I got to where you could occasionally be cognizant in the dream, which is pretty interesting. I mean, it's not something that happens every night, but that was something that I had never experienced before until after I started using the Ormus. And another thing, I guess that was basically during the first year. I used to have these little warts under my arms, and they went away. And they've been gone for quite some time now, and they have not returned, which is really nice also. Other things that occur, I've had spells where the phone would ring and I would know who was calling before I went to the phone, or the really interesting one would be to walk by the phone and glance at it for no particular reason, and when you turn your back, the phone rings. That's interesting because it would happen quite a few times in 2 or 3 days period, and then, you know, it go a week or two or whatever, and then it might happen again. I noticed that those kind of things would happen more often than what you might expect on occasion. Lots of people have experiences, but when you start noticing things like that, when they occur with more frequency or more often at different times, you start to realize, there's something going on here. And so basically, it's I'm quite well convinced, you know, it does help to enhance some of your psychic abilities as well as intuitive abilities. And there's one gentleman had a son that had injured his hand, had cut it really badly, and he told me that they would actually put the Ormus on the wound when they would change the dressing, and he said they were quite surprised at how quickly it healed and that the feeling actually came back in his fingers. From the way it was related to me, they thought that it was really quite a phenomenon, considering they weren't sure if he was going to get the feeling back in one of his fingers. And they had noticed that it was healing quicker than they thought it would, which was interesting, too. And a little over a year ago, I had knee surgery for torn cartilage, and that healed incredibly fast. And I didn't have the swelling or the bruising that normally goes with that kind of surgery. And, when I went in for my follow-up, they were looking at my leg going, well, wow, you know, normally there's a lot of swelling. She said, you know, you should still be taking it easy for another couple of weeks. And I was like, well, here I am. And so that's definitely shows, you know, some of the credence toward healing potential. And I
Steve?
Guess, yeah.
This is Barry. Now, when I was there several years ago, this is when you were first getting started, you were using a pyramid to work with this stuff. And
I had a pyramid in the basement.
Uh-huh. And I hear that you continue to do that. What have you noticed from that?
Well, as time went on, the energy got really intense in the house here. And it got to a point where I took it down and just put up a smaller pyramid upstairs. But I also noticed that it was after I had the pyramid in the house. I'm not sure exactly for how long, but that was when I started to get the pyramid shapes in the crystals I was making. And I was having some rather intense dreams, and very vivid. And sometimes you could remember the visual parts and couldn't really remember all the conversations or stuff. But I found some very interesting things. I used to try to scribble down, like, symbols and things I saw. There was lots of sacred geometry that I would kind of flash back, you know, the next day after I woke up, and it seems that several times in dreams I found myself in this huge sort of a round stone room with people sitting around this big table, and a lady that's a friend of mine that also makes her own Ormus. She had had a dream the same week that I had the first one, and it was almost the same dream. And she said that I was at the table. There were 12 of us at the table, and there were two women that I guess were supplying the beverages or whatever, and she was there, but she was only there in spirit. She wasn't able to interact with anyone. But when we were talking one day and come to find out that we were talking about the same place, that was, you know, I found that to be quite phenomenal, actually. And considering we haven't even figured out all of the significance of that, except that we both kind of felt that this went back to somewhere in the past, possibly to do with the Egypt or something to that effect. But
What were the visuals with that? I mean, what did you see?
It was like a huge stone table,
mm-hmm.
and there were passages that came from different areas to this room.
Wow.
And there was one, like, rather large gentleman at the opposite end of the table that had, it wasn't like the cloak like you'd see like a king or something, but it was a big guy wearing this particular outfit. Hard to describe because I couldn't remember all of it, but some of the symbols that were on the table, I didn't remember at first, and then it started coming, and they were pretty much just geometric shapes. I mean, whether it was triangles or like a Star of David, these things have come and gone periodically for years now. And since then, I saw a progression that started with basically what looks like the symbol of an atom. It's just a dot with a little circle around it. Then you have a triangle. Then you add another triangle that laps over it, so you have what's similar to a Star of David, and it continues to grow. And from what I've figured out so far, if you drew all this out onto a piece of paper, it would eventually end up similar to like the Tree of Life thing, because all these symbols will fit into that matrix. I remember using the term matrix, I think, the other day when I was talking to, I forgot if it was Dennis or Sharon, but I think it the sacred geometry and these symbols and the stuff we're working with, they all tie in somehow. And I think a lot of it is about the energies and the basically, I think, how the quantum realm manifests through these different dimensions, I guess.
Sounds like this matrix could be used, the word matrix could be used interchangeably with mandala.
Yeah, but though I have a couple of symbols I just drew on the chalkboard that's on the wall down in my basement lab, and I also had a printout of the Hebrew alphabet that I have down there, and things like that, just because I used to also see symbols I really never really could identify, but to me they looked like some kind of ancient Chinese or something. Very difficult to try to recall and draw them the way I could recall, you know, from the dreams. But I think it's, you know, some of it's like an ancient language, and other parts of it are like sacred geometry.
So have you put any of these symbols onto your computer or taken pictures of them or anything like that?
Actually, just recently I was thinking about, I guess, like get a piece of graph paper and see if I can't just kind of draw it out some. Yeah, that's what I would basically have to, I guess, try to scan it to get it onto the computer once I get it on paper. And plus I have a notebook that I've scribbled in.
Right. Oh, but maybe even scan that too.
And
one of the little questions I have, Steve, about the big pyramid that you were talking about that was in your basement that was kind of like a bit overpowering. When you said it just got intense in the house, how did it get intense?
Okay. Well, it got to where it would become difficult to sleep at night. Because, see, the pyramid was in the basement, and it's underneath the master bedroom. So, plus, occasionally I would actually lay down or meditate or take a nap under the pyramid. But at the time, a lady that was living with me, she started noticing that too. And So at one point I moved it, and then another point I had it out on my back deck. And basically, I guess it was just both of us were, you know, when I was taking larger amounts of Ormus or mixing different products, and she would experience these things without even taking the Ormus. It was, I guess the way to describe it was you could almost see another dimension sort of mixed in with this one. I mean, it's almost like trying to look through a fog, but sometimes I could see like energy lines or grid lines, or maybe it's magnetic lines from the earth, you know, like the earth grid.
Mm-hmm.
And then either one of us might hear music faintly down in the basement, and it was just nice kind of sounding music, and you didn't really hear any voices singing. And, I mean, sometimes you would actually, you know, go downstairs to turn off the stereo, and the stereo wasn't on.
Oh, wow.
Which was interesting. Yeah. And and then sometimes it would be like a group of people talking, but you could never understand what they were saying. And then you start thinking, oh, I left the television on. You know, and one evening she went downstairs, and I heard her just crack up and start laughing. I said, what's wrong? She goes, I went to turn the TV off, and it's not on. So, yeah, that was pretty interesting. And I had a spell where 3 days in a row, I'd go to take a shower, and I'd step into the shower, and I'd hear a woman's voice. And I was here by myself at the time. And I'd hear a woman's voice call my name. And the first time, I thought it was just the tub creaking or something. You know, I didn't pay too much attention. The second day, I heard it rather distinctly. And I shut the water off for a second. I went, hello? I said, is that you? Nobody answered, and I'm like, okay. The third day, it was, could not miss it. I was in the shower, the water's running, and there was this woman's voice, almost, I mean, just rather loudly, and I could even tell that it came from the living room area from where I was in the shower. And she called my name rather loudly and forcefully, and that was when I kind of felt the hair stand up on the back of my neck, sort of, and I opened the door, and I said, identify yourself, and I haven't heard her since. So whatever that means, I've had different people tell me different things about that. But
now, this was while the pyramid was still around?
Yes.
Now, how was the pyramid made?
I purchased, I'm not even sure where that was online, I bought the fittings for all the corners and the top piece. They were already made at the proper angles to put, you could put like a half-inch pipe. And what I did was I took 8-foot sections of copper pipe and measured for the base, and then cut my links that go up to the apex, and then you assemble it. And so you've got your four corner pieces, and then there's your piece for the top, you know, and all the pipes fit into it, and they got little small set screws so you can lock the pipe in.
Oh, yeah.
And so I had used copper pipe when I did it. And I also assembled a smaller one, making a 4-foot base with PVC pipe, and had that set up for a while also.
Did that work?
And it seemed to, but it was different than the large copper one.
Uh-huh.
And
how?
It just didn't seem as powerful, I guess you would say.
Did you get the impression that it operated on a different frequency?
I would say that's probably the best way to describe it. Yeah, I would say it was a different frequency, and I've had other people tell me that, you know, if you make one from stone or you make it from wood or whatever, that it changes the effect of how it works. But I think the you know, a lot of it, I guess, is how you just might personally interact. You know, mm-hmm. We start working with these broad spectrum of, you know, how we consciously and subconsciously interact, I think also may have some difference.
Was that the same ratio of base to height as the Great Pyramid, or was it a different?
Yeah, it's supposed to be the same ratio.
I see, uh-huh.
That was why I ordered those parts to assemble it, and I forgot what the exact measurement was. But
Did you make your Ormus inside the pyramid, Steve?
Well, I did do some of that, too. And actually, I've thought about doing that again since, you know, it's been some time since I had the pyramid inside the house. And I also have a small pyramid that you buy. Oh, it's only about maybe a foot tall. It's just a small one with the little metal tubes and small connectors for the corners and everything. And you can hang it from the ceiling or set it on a table or something like that. I have one of those hanging in the center of my bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been there for a long time now. And, you know, well, some people store things in pyramids, you know, and one fellow I was talking to, actually it's been about a year or so ago, he's got a couple of pyramids, small pyramids in his refrigerator, and he keeps his vegetables and stuff inside the pyramid within the refrigerator, and he said that they last longer.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was an interesting idea.
You know, in Russia, they've been using these pyramids, like 70-meter, really tall pyramids, and they say that water doesn't freeze in them, and that it that plants and stuff do unusually well. It sounds to me like a lot of these effects are related to Ormus. And you said that you're getting these pyramidal crystals when you're working with this stuff, right?
Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Okay. Well, when I first started playing with the crystals, so to speak, I would take, when I made the mana, I would take my initial reaction water and the first wash and combine them and take it to neutral pH. And I'd use a water bath and a small propane pilot assembly and run it somewhere between, you know, 90 to 120 degrees to slowly mm-hmm. evaporate it down. And the salts would form these really nice-looking square cube-shaped crystals, and they had intricate small patterns in them. And then I started leaving a little precip in the mix and take that to neutral. And of course, the precip, by the time you get that to neutral, it redissolves into your liquid and was doing that. And when I started doing the evaporation slower, for a while I was doing it like from 120 to 145 degrees, and then I, as time went on, I started trying to do it slower.
Mm-hmm.
And I was after about a year or so, after I was, you know, I'd been toying with the crystals, I would continually leave a little bit of precip in the mixture and take it to neutral or close. You know, it was, it could be anywhere between 6.5 and 7.5 pH. And then, for some reason, I started to get those pyramidal shapes. And occasionally they're fairly large, you know, and it's never the same every time, of course. But, I mean, sometimes you'll have a mixture. Some are just kind of square or elongated, sort of a rectangular shape. And some of them will have the step pyramid look to them. And sometimes you'll, for some reason, they'll be larger, you know, almost like the what I call the skirt of the steps around the pyramid shape would be almost the size of a quarter. That doesn't happen real often. They're usually not that large. But
are there more pictures than you have on your website?
Yes, I need to. I've got some now that I want to take. Try to get a better picture of. I've got another camera now that I think should work better. And
yeah,
that would help. And try to get those on there. And the other thing that I'm the mixture that I'm evaporating right now comes from a little bit different. I vortex charged the Great Salt Lake water while I was making the mana using eight magnets, and I made a small Fresnel, it's a semi-Fresnel cage around the container, grounded to the base of a small drill press I'm using, and of course the motor is up into the back of the press, and I put a little bit of shielding up with some foil, which I'm not sure how much it's really going to help, but the motor's not directly over the thing. But the main thing is you're not using any kind of alternating current for charging your stuff. It's I've got some fairly large. The magnets are about an inch and a quarter long and 3/8 of an inch thick, equally spaced, close to the bottom of the container. And then there's a shield around that, and then I have a layer of plastic around that, and then there's another metallic shield, and then there's foil around that, and then I let it touch the base. And I'm thinking about actually running a earth ground from outside in
to also attach to the base of the press, because you let the stuff charge for quite a long time. You wouldn't be able to stand there and stir for 4 hours, you know.
Right.
But,
what have you noticed from that?
I'm still pondering on that one. This is something I decided to try just recently, and I guess what led up to that was it's been months ago now, but I was already kept pondering all the other minerals and other compounds that are in the natural salt crystals and ocean water and stuff. And I've been pondering this actually for more than a year now, the fact that there's more to this than just our platinum group elements. At this point, I don't have any proof, but I believe that we've got a lot of really nice minerals, compounds. There's some very delicate, like oil. Like if you take sea salt and evaporate it down, yeah, your fingers, you'll notice it's almost like an oily substance. Mm-hmm. I think these oils are also... I guess you could say that it might be the oils from the compounds that, and of course there's the ormus is in that also. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the elements in our periodic chart actually exist in other states as well as the platinum group. And I think we may be even getting more than we originally thought we were, but that's a theory.
Well, Michael Burberry, a previous conference call person, interviewee, reported that he's found 10 or 11 other elements other than Hudson's elements that have that you can take to a white powder state using the hydrogen peroxide method. So are you doing some new? Tell us more about your new product.
Okay, it's an electrolysis method using pure gold probe and distilled water. And you get this red gold. It's a pinkish red. It's not a deep red.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't precipitate. It actually, the liquid actually stays. I guess you'd say the gold is suspended and is a suspension. I mean,
mm-hmm.
If you turn your lights off and shine a bright flashlight into the side of the flask, you get a really nice green chartreuse color.
Oh yeah.
And this is supposedly a very very fine diatomic form of gold. And I did this several years ago when I was doing the HCl peroxide method, and I was, I would do pH swings and evaporate the gold chloride down to wet crystals and then redissolve them. And this went on for about 6 months or a little longer, playing with this one batch. For some reason, I kept trying to see how many different colors or different stages I could get gold to go to. Because as I recall at the time, there were people talking about whether or not the pH swings would work, or are you really breaking the gold down or whatever. But the different colors that you get, the more you break it down,
mm-hmm.
you get these different colored precipitates with that method. Well, eventually, one night I was up in the middle of the night and I was playing around with my little project, and I accidentally added hydrogen peroxide to the solution when it was at pH 10.5,
uh-huh.
and it started fizzing. I mean, it was really fizzing. I went, "Oh, you dummy." And I was like, "Well, I thought I had totally messed it up." And so I just left it alone. It took 2 or 3 days for it to finally stop fizzing, and I brought the pH slowly back down. And in the next couple of days, I had this really nice pink solution that did not precipitate. There was a little bit of precipitate in the bottom, but the liquid on top stayed this pinkish red. And I tried to duplicate this once since then, and it didn't work. And I didn't have a lot of that, but I shared it with quite a few people. And everybody that tried it just loved it. I mean, it's like everybody just got smiley faced, and it was just, it just made you feel nice.
Uh-huh. Right.
And so when this electrolysis process came along, and when I first made it, and I realized that this looks so similar to what I had done before, but it's nowhere near as time-consuming. I mean, I spent months playing around with,
sure.
the HCL method, and this method here, they say it's the gold of Artephius, which is
uh-huh.
one of the old alchemists. And
right.
I'm not sure if he had devised his own way of doing electrolysis or if he had actually done this a different method. I don't know. But
mm-hmm.
But basically, what we were after anyway with this whole thing is the fact that this is supposed to be a very small diatomic form of gold. And
mm-hmm.
In the instructions that I got when I got the method, when you turn your lights off and shine the flashlight in it, you should get this greenish or chartreuse color. And that,
right.
that tells you that you have successfully completed your task.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time I run the process, it comes out the same way.
That's great.
Yeah. So it's repeatable, and you're not using a lot of chemicals, you know, also. Which
mm-hmm.
and
Are the smiley faces repeatable?
Are the what?
Are the smiley faces repeatable?
Well, it seems that the biggest response from this is vivid dreams. People seem to get a lot of dream state, or it's really good for meditation. I kind of feel a little bit of an energy boost when I take it. I take about a tablespoon once a day, or not every day, but periodically. Usually when I'm taking any form of Ormus, whatever day I generally have a routine where I take, you know, wet method almost every day. But sometimes I'll just I'll look at what I got, and if something's like, here I am, I'm go, oh, that's you today, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But I kind of get energetic from it, and I think it does. I still go through spells where I don't remember dreams, or I'll wake up and I'm like, I know that I was dreaming, but I can't remember. And then all of a sudden, you know, there'll be two or three nights where, you know, your dreams are rather vivid. And and I used to dream in black and white a lot. I see color in my dreams a lot more than I used to.
I want some.
But okay. And it's nice. What I was going to say is most of the Ormus products, you know, have the salt, or they have the sodium matrix, you know, in order to trap the Ormus. But this is a non-salty form, which is also, I guess, nice. And some people are still concerned about salt, which is another thing. You know, most of us probably on the conference here understand that, you know, the sea salt is not bad for you like man-made iodized salt. And it's obviously because of all the wonderful minerals and compounds that are in it. You know, and it's the electrolytes. Our body runs off of these electrolytes, food for your body. And unlike the man-made salt, I've had to try to explain that to quite a few people that are always concerned about the salty taste of the mana. And generally, that's not a problem.
What do you people often have expectations of what this stuff does? And you probably have developed some stock answers to some of those expectation questions.
Well, yeah. The thing, that's one thing that I've always, you know, I really do believe that for the most part, it does kind of work on an individual kind of basis, because one person is going to feel one thing and one might another, or, you know, another person might say, well, I don't notice anything. And I don't want people to expect, you know, a lot of wild immediate things to occur. You know, because sometimes it is subtle, which is what's such a cool part of your your URL. You know, the fact that there are a
right.
lot of subtle energies involved. But I have noticed, it seems from talking to people in the last year or so, that more and more people seem to notice effects more quickly or in shorter period of time than they used to, like back when I first started getting into all this. And because for me, I didn't really start noticing that much difference until about the 2.5 to 3 month mark.
Mm-hmm.
And now some people say they take one taste of something, and it could be anyone's Ormus, and they notice something right away. You know, it doesn't happen for everyone.
Uh-huh.
But I think a lot of it, there's so many factors, but a lot just depends on the individual. I think that, you know, I think just everything here on the planet, you know, we're moving into some form of higher frequency as well, and just the fact that I think there's this so-called spiritual awakening that I perceive that's going on the planet, you know, also helps to bolster this type of thing.
You think that's related to it, huh?
Yeah. And because I can't promise somebody that they're going to have a specific effect.
No.
That would be misleading, you know. I mean, I think that for some people they might have to try something for a longer period of time. I'm convinced, you know, that the ancients, you know, would use you know, the Ormus for years. I mean, you know, it's not an overnight pill.
right.
That's the big thing, is that it's not an overnight pill, and it all becomes a learning experience. The other thing I think is I feel more and more connected to just nature, natural things. You know, you just continue to develop this connection to things. You know, and I guess you could say it broadens and deepens your perspective, even though it's hard to pinpoint exactly what it is. You know, it's another one of those
right. Subtleties.
You know, but and so
you think that you're maybe attracting more people that are tuned into that, or it's just that there are more people?
I think it's both. I think it's both.
Well, what about the potentiality, the possibility that your Ormus is like five times stronger than it used to be, and so therefore people get that much more of a hit, that much more of a noticeable effect straight away?
Well, that could be possible. I don't know how I could measure that, but
I know how to measure it. I measure that by dousing all the time.
I remember you douse a lot, yes. And I think that's great. Actually, I'm going back over and taking a whole new look at the law of attraction. I kind of went underground for a while. I kind of dropped out for a while and haven't really been popping up on any work groups or anything. A lot of things have been changing in the last year or two, and all of a sudden it's like now it's time, you know. It's I think the other thing too is, you know, there's I think almost all of us on the planet are actually multi-talented, and we all have special gifts and whatnot, and we can make all kinds of choices.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just at a point now where this just has so much more meaning and depth to me than, you know, working on an air conditioner or working at the factory trying to make a living.
Right.
It's like another stage of awakening. I think you keep going through stages. There's all these levels that I guess we move through, and each of us has, you know, as they say, everybody has a mountain to climb, and sometimes you got to climb that mountain two or three times, you know, and you might find out there's another hill to go up, but the main thing is that you're still climbing, you're still moving forward, and however you get there, you know, it's a matter of just working on going that way, you know, however the path leads you, and
well, you know, you don't take a vacation to get it over with.
You never stop learning is what I'm getting at, actually.
There you go.
It just, no matter how much we know or learn about whatever it is, there's more, you know. And I think that's a big part of it, really, is that the journey goes on. The journey never ends.
There you go, hopefully.
You know, one of the things that I mentioned in my blurb about you, Steve, is the fact that you like to share with people how to do the WEC method for themselves. What would you describe as the most essential things that people just need to have just to get themselves launched into making the WEC method for themselves?
Oh, okay. Well, of course, you got to have some source material, Celtic sea salt or Great Salt Lake water. The Masada Dead Sea Salt, any of those three are definitely good source material. You know, you can use litmus paper for doing your pH checks, but you really should just, even if you get just a pocket pH meter, would make life a lot easier for doing this. I think the part that gets a lot of people is they need to have some sodium hydroxide, and one that we used to use around here is no longer available, so you have to get it from a lab supply, which actually is good. If you use lab grade or food grade, whether it's, you know, food grade peroxide for one process or the sodium hydroxide, but you need to be able to make your sodium hydroxide solution to do your precipitate, and have a container to stir, and a glass stirring rod or a stainless steel, good stainless steel, not the cheapo stuff, really, because sometimes, you know, like you can buy pots and pans that are supposedly stainless steel, and you'll notice if you cook salty food in them, sometimes they get pitted, so you got to beware. But, yeah, I mean, basically a glass bowl or HDPE container to stir your solution in to make it. But you start off, you know, like if you're using like the Dead Sea Salt or the Celtic, I like to, well, like a cup of the Dead Sea Salt will make quite a bit. I mean, you can use like a gallon of water. There's variations to the original method that I learned, you know, like a half a cup to about a half a gallon of distilled water, and you have to make your sodium hydroxide solution. And if you can rig a little holder to hold your pH meter into the solution, makes it handy. And then you can stir and slowly bring your pH up by dripping your lye solution until you get up no higher than 10.78. I've noticed that usually you're done before you get that high. I mean, by the time you get around 10.6, 10.65, usually you're done. And
you get very little more precipitate after that point. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, right. And the temperature of the solution might make a little difference.
Right.
Now, if I'm working with Celtic sea salt, I'll dissolve it in water, and I'll go ahead and boil it, and then filter it after it cools down some. Just so
mm-hmm.
you can filter. You want to filter out the algae and the organics that are in that living salt. Because when I get the Celtic in bulk, you know, it's got some algae and stuff in it. And if you dissolve it and then boil it, you're going to get all the M state and minerals that are also in the organics in the solution. Then you can filter it out. And as it cools down, then you can start precipitating.
Mm-hmm.
And
now, I've heard that the Celtic sea salt will, if you don't boil it, that there's still living stuff in there, and it might grow.
Oh, right, yeah. I mean, you definitely should boil the Celtic and
mm-hmm.
then filter it, because there is quite a bit of organic material in it.
Right.
The Masada...
Is it nice to have ormus that grows on you, though?
Oh, what was that?
Is it nice to have ormus that grows on you?
Ormus that grows on you. I don't think you'd want that kind of growing on you, but...
depends on where it grows.
Someone seen in a post yesterday... about applying ormus topically to, I think she called it, I think was saying that she was starting to get a bit wrinkled or, anyway, she was saying, she was asking about applying the ormus as a facial uplifter. Have you ever had any of your customers use any of your ormus products cosmetically?
Well, that's another one that I haven't put up on the website. But not the ormus precipitates per se. And actually, I haven't really tried that either, which might be interesting. But I also charge grapeseed oil with the salty brine to let the oils that are in the brine be absorbed by the grapeseed. So you're charging your grapeseed massage oil with some of the M-State oils that are in the salt brine. And
so would you translate what you mean by charging it?
Oh, well, in other words, you put the oil and the brine together in a container, and periodically shake it up every so often, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever, how many times you want, over a day or so, and then you know, let it settle. It'll separate, you know, because the water that's in the brine will separate from the oil. The oil, the grapeseed, will sort of pick up the oils from your brine, and then you can separate that off, and then I run that through a filter, refilter it. I use certified organic grapeseed oil.
Good.
And that.
You
that,
also put it in the pyramid.
Yeah, putting it in the pyramid wouldn't hurt either, because I used to set the mana in a pyramid for a day or two before I would mail it out to people. And yeah, I think I'm going to be doing that again. But
when you separate the oil from the brine, how do you do that?
Yeah, see, when you put your grapeseed oil in the bottle with with the brine and squeeze the air out of the bottle and cap it off. The oils will mix together, and that's the idea anyway. You know, you want the oils will mix together, but the salty water part of it will stay separate from the oil if you let it sit. You know, what you do is you shake it up periodically so that they can mix well, and they'll continue to separate back out. So after you've shaken it up, you know, at least 5, 6, 7 times over a day or so, then you let it sit and settle out, and then you separate the salt brine from the grapeseed oil. And then what I do from there is I'll filter the oil, and there you have your grapeseed oil that presumably it is charged with a little bit of the M-State oil that was in your brine.
Has
anybody
used it for massage and reported any results?
My ex-girlfriend did a lot of massage therapy, and she used it. And some of the clients would actually mention that, you know, that they could sense, you know, she said it was like kind of makes more of a bridge between the therapist and the person that's, you know, having their massage work done. And a couple of ladies said that, once again, there's that dream state. A couple of her clients said that they had fantastic dreams the night after they had their massage. So that was interesting. There's something about this dream state thing that keeps coming up. But and of course the grapeseed, the reason I do the grapeseed is because some people have reactions to other types of nut oils or like almonds and stuff, and the grapeseed be the most popular. And, you know, if I start making this on a regular basis, I'll probably just use the one oil. And you can also add essential oils to that. You know, like at the time you're about to do a massage, or if you're gonna treat dry skin, you know, grapeseed is great by itself. I mean, it's wonderful for your skin.
And I think it absorbs better than like some of the other oils as well.
Yeah, it does absorb well. That's the other thing. You can even add a little bit of a carrier oil like jojoba or something if you want to try to further that. You know, make it more of a carrier. And a couple of people I know will add, I forgot the mixture. This one lady makes a mixture of ancient healing oils, and she adds a few drops of that to the oil when she's about to do the massage work. And she said her husband had problems with his knees and his lower back, and she started using the grapeseed oil I was making and then adding some of the ancient healing oils to it, and that in a week's time, he said he felt like a new man. And I thought that was kind of interesting. Also, for me, it helps with achy joints or dry skin, you know. And that's another one.
So people could order that from you, right?
Yes, I need to start making that again. I haven't made any for a while lately, but
if there's a demand, you'd sure do it.
Yes, and
could you list some of your other products?
Okay, well, the Dead Sea Gold, you know, which is wet method. Made from the Masada Dead Sea Salt, and that's one. And I was debating on how many products I want to carry because I don't want to do too many for one thing, and I'm still in the middle of wanting to reorganize my website and adding, you know, my front page is getting a little outdated, yes, I still there'll be a couple of name changes. There's history about there's several different people using the same names for their products and all. I just basically using similar methods, similar stuff, but I'm going to be changing the names, although the products will be the same. But I'll be doing the Dead Sea Gold. I can still do the GSL. I'm going to do a mono blend, which right now it's basically White Dove. But I'm going to be changing that, and it's going to be a mixture of the different sea salt and along with the GSL water.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's just going to be, as the name would say, it'll be a blend of the different source materials, and call it the mono blend, which is
now,
also
what's
a
white dove.
Huh?
What is the White Dove?
Okay, the White Dove was. When you do a sodium burn on black sand, after you've done the burn and you've done your boil process and then microfilter, which is very important, you take that real high pH liquid that you have at that point and use it to precipitate the GSL, the Great Salt Lake water. What I've found is, like, well, we're going to get into anyway, here's what's happening. When you do that, you are adding more of the gold, iridium, and rhodium to your mana when you precipitate that way. But if you notice, if you make M3 from this same solution, you know, which is what you're doing is you're trying to make M3 from the black sand.
Mm-hmm.
But if you precipitate your M3 solution and look at how much precip you get, and then look at the amount of the solution that you would use when you make the white dove, I'm not, you know, I know that you're adding more energy and a little bit more gold and iridium and rhodium to your white dove, but it's not a lot. I mean, mm-hmm. but it does seem to raise that frequency some.
Oh, wow.
But the problem is you got to get some fairly decent black sand, which seems to be getting more difficult to get.
Mm-hmm.
And I am just about out of it. And right now mm-hmm. What I have left right now is I'm using to make stuff for my mom. She's about to have major surgery, and so mm-hmm. this will be the end of the Essenes black sand that I had.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have been gathering what I did a couple of years ago. I would get black sand from the local river here, and there used to be several gold mines way upstream from here. I'm in the gold mm-hmm. belt here in Virginia. But what you do is I would collect the sand and try to clean it out as much as I could, and then you have to roast it. I take mm-hmm. it to red heat in a large cast iron pan over a propane flame to burn off any of the arsenic and lead compounds that could be in the sand.
Oh, I see.
And then I processed it like I would do M3, and then I sent it off to have it assayed, and it came back okay. The problem is it takes a lot of work to get just enough sand just to do one burn or to do a lye boil, and it's really labor-intensive, and it's not practical. You know, if I'm going to be doing all this other stuff, it's going to be difficult to take the time to keep trying to collect and work this sand. I mean, as time goes on, I may find easier ways of doing that, but
you tried
I'm finding
Doug
that...
Borst's,
oh, go ahead.
Have you tried Doug Borst's sand? He's got some black sand that he says was some of the sand that the Essene was using.
Okay, I'll have to look into that then, because...
He was one of our guests that I was telling you about, Steve, that we had a couple of months ago. And he raves about the quality of his sand that he makes almost from it.
And he sells the sand.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that sounds.
I just got back from Arizona, and while I was there was a gentleman that gave me two small ammo case full of black sand, and it looks like pretty good stuff. I'm just using it to put around a water bottle to see if I can grow a giant geranium or something, but I'll bet you he'd be interested in selling some for sodium burn purpose.
Okay.
So
yeah, because I've got just enough sodium for one more burn right now, and
mm-hmm.
so I'm going to have to order more of that. But yeah, that sounds good. I don't know how far over everybody's head the sodium burn thing is, but that is obviously a different process, and it's a lot more time consuming, but.
And
at
dangerous.
The same time, you know, you're achieving, I think it's an even higher vibrational property to it,
mm-hmm.
I guess you would say. That's one way to put it.
Higher energy.
Higher energy, yeah.
Yeah. Dennis, do you think we could open up to questions from everybody?
Hell yeah. I bet there's lots of questions people want to ask right now. Just before we go down that track, I wanted to... I butted in a while ago when you were talking about pyramids, and I used what I call a power plate pyramid to make my ormesson, and I have the three points of that pyramid downstairs, and I have the top apex points of that pyramid on the ceiling above where I make my ormesson. So I've got it mathematically worked out so that it's an equilateral triangle downstairs, and then it's in exactly the same dimensions to the apex point, and the king's chamber part of the pyramid is where I make my ormus on the floor on the second level. And but what's the reason I'm telling you that is that if I leave that power pyramid up, and I've done this a couple of times, it kills all my goldfish if I leave it up for one day.
Uh-oh.
And so clearly it develops a very strong field. And you talked about having a very strong field in your place, Steve. And I'm going, I know you got a confined metal pyramid, and it's not like as big as the power pyramid that I make, which has got the distance between the points. and the points are defined by Tesla power plates, the distance between them would be about 30 feet. So 30 foot by 30 foot by 30 foot, and then 30 foot up to the apex. That's quite a big sort of power pyramid that I make my Ormus in. It charges it very strongly. And I just wanted to make the suggestion that if you guys are going to use pyramids in your place, make sure that it's not having any adverse effect, because some of them are so strong that that it will have effects on things around you, including it will empower your intentions, and it will have all manner of other different effects, which I'll talk about at some other time. But just be mindful of the power of those things, and use them like and respect them like the powerful energy that they are. So who's got some questions for Steve?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is Lou Harris, Tucson.
Hi, Lou.
Hello.
Greetings. I was just wondering what kind of pH meter you favored, perhaps, or do you have several favorites?
Okay. Well, I use Hanna Instruments. You used to be able to buy directly from them. Now you have to get it from one of their affiliates. Personally, I'm using an HI-8314 membrane pH meter. A much less expensive one, a pocket one, would be the Hanna Checker. I'm trying to remember what model number that is.
I can look it up. Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, let me. No, that's an 800 number. I don't see a model number on my pocket meter. That's odd. They usually have a number on almost all of them. Well, it's called the Checker by Hanna, and I'm not sure of the price, but it's nowhere near as expensive as the larger meter that I use. And it has a replaceable probe, and it's roughly about 7 inches tall, you know, and it has an LED screen. It's a very handy portable meter, and you know, there are pH meters available for under $100. I mean, the larger one that I use is over $200, and the probe replacements average about $75 a piece. But
how
a probe lasts a long time.
How often do you replace?
Let's see. Well, in about, what is that, going on about 7 years, I'm on my third probe on this meter. So they last a pretty long time. The last time I ordered, which was just 2 weeks ago, I went ahead and ordered two, and I'm just going to leave one in the box as a spare. But, yeah, those are gel-filled probes, and, of course, they come with the instructions on how to take care of them, and you can get your storage solutions and buffer solutions. The larger meter, you can calibrate, so you periodically check calibration. Anytime you replace a probe or batteries, of course, you recalibrate. You have to have your solutions to use, and they come with complete instructions on how to do that. But it's a very accurate meter. It goes to 1/100th, plus or minus 1/100th of a pH factor, so it's very accurate, which for some of the real advanced work, you need very accurate stuff. Most of the products that I'm offering, you know, you don't have to be within 1/100th of a pH, but
right,
yeah. Especially if you're doing wet method at home. And the other thing I wanted to mention was, you know, the wet method precips, you know, from your Dead Sea salt, Great Salt Lake, you know, Celtic sea salt. I would say the Himalayan that some people are using. That's sort of your multivitamin. You know, that has a broad spectrum of the Ormus materials in it, and you know that's the best way to start, really, if you're really going to do this, you know, and you really want to take this path, so to speak. You know, you want to start off, of course, with your multivitamin. You want all these different things, because you're trying to replenish things that we miss from our diet, that broad spectrum is what all of us actually need. I mean, you know, and which would
I think that's a very good point. I
yeah.
That's the thing that I have to tell people more often than anything else is that
because when you say the word gold, it gets people excited sometimes. And
mm-hmm.
you know, if you're really looking for the, you know, a wide range of benefits, I think you need to do the, you know, the wet method precepts. And over longer periods of time, as time goes on, you will eventually start to notice that, yeah, there are changes, whether it's mentally, physically, spiritually, and basically it'll become a combination of those things.
I have a question. This is Richard. About your use of magnets, and I was just curious. I've got a couple of bar magnets I got out of a wrecking yard that, they're probably 10 pounds each, and they have a pole that once you get them, once they come together, they're real hard to get apart. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can just use something like this with product that you purchase or even with product that you make and clean it, or is it kind of you just follow your intuition about what to do with that or what?
Well, I haven't really tried charging the finished product using magnets. I guess, you know, that's something you could experiment with. We're getting into another area of of experimenting with the Ormus materials. I guess the other thing about it is, generally speaking, anyway, it's believed that, you know, the liquid forms are much more assimilable to your body than, you know, the dry powders.
I was
wondering.
I could barely hear you.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought you were done.
Okay. No, yeah, go ahead. Did I answer your question? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you did. Thank you.
I was wondering why you use distilled water. I thought distilled water was, like, bad for the human body. And also, how do you do the hydrogen peroxide as opposed to the sodium hydroxide? Which is your preference, and how much do you use of the hydrogen?
Oh, okay. Well, that's actually two different methods. When we're doing the wet method, you don't, or the way I'm doing it, I don't use peroxide with the wet method. The HCl, H2O2 process, what's involved with using peroxide there is the peroxide, when you add it to your chloride solution, it enables it to disaggregate the gold without having to use nitric acid. So you can eliminate having to do the evaporations and dealing with the nasty vapors and stuff from the nitric. Of course, you know, I get the food grade peroxide when I'm working with that.
What is that method called?
Excuse me?
What is that method called?
It's the HCl or the chloride method. HCl H2O2. It's the
peroxide.
Could
you repeat your question?
Sorry. Have you ever used trap water instead of distilled water?
I played with the traps probably 3 or 4 years ago. The problem was with the city water here. You had to run an awful lot of water to try to get some results, and I think if you have well water or a good ground source where you're getting natural water from the ground, you probably will get better results with the trap. That's my personal experience. Some people have had, you know, may have had better results than I was getting using city water.
Yeah, and some guys that I've talked to have got recirculating traps, which means it just goes around and around and gets more and more ormified with not a big wastage of water.
I think that's a better way, a better method, because you're going to maximize, you know, the potential.
Well, what Kevin in Australia found was that when you recirculate, you only get a certain finite amount of ormus out. You may get more of it out by revving it up a little bit more, but there is only a certain finite amount of it in there. And if you energize it, however, which the trap automatically does, you're going to get more effect from trap water, and probably more of it will come out as you run it, recirculate it through the trap.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think you nailed the hammer on the head.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else got any questions?
Okay, I think she had another question, but she kind of faded out on us there.
Maybe not. Anyone else got any questions? Steve, tell us who you are and where you're from.
Well, that's Lou Harrison Tucson again. If you have another comment first. I experienced very much the same things you did with vivid dreams and voices and faces. An acquaintance on this forum suggested that I was remote viewing, and that's what I was seeing. So I was supposed to ask the faces what their name was, but I haven't done it. That's all I had. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Richard. I just was remembering when you were talking about the hearing people talking in the background, this kind of thing. I've had some of that happen, and I'm a psychologist, by the way. So I've heard some of this before, but it seemed like it picked up when I started the Ormus. And I know it wasn't someone around because I live out in the country and there's no one, you know, for quite some distance. And but when you were talking about that, I was thinking, wow, that's another thing that I guess it's interesting you brought it up because it just triggered some thoughts in my mind.
Yeah, and I think a term for that might be, is that clairaudience or clairaudio? I'm not sure. Another thing not very often, but sometimes I've actually heard things that sounded like they were coming from blocks away, and you wonder if that was just, you know, if the sound was just happening to be traveling that far, or if you were actually, you know, hearing something that normally you wouldn't hear, but it's the same, it's a similar kind of experience.
Right.
Which makes you wonder how transdimensional is Ormus, and does it dissolve the layers or the barriers or the definitions between the different dimensions so that it's kind of like having a leaky boat, that other dimensions kind of like leak in.
One of the
terms. And you become somewhat more transparent.
Yeah.
To all these different dimensional existence, levels of existence that beings are living on become more apparent to you. Any of you guys got any comments on that?
Hello?
Yeah.
It's Arlene. Hi, Dennis. Hi.
Hello.
Steve.
Hi.
I'm in New Jersey, and I've used a couple of different Ormus products. I haven't used any of yours yet, but you never know. What I've noticed in the last year and a half, and I used to experience some of the things that you talked about even before I started using Ormus, but I really feel that it's where you put your attention. For instance, if I take some of my Ormus products and then I go into a meditative state, I feel that I could definitely get further out there, as I say. And as far as, like, knowing who's calling on the phone, that's kind of become automatic for me. And part of it has to do with knowing the times that some of the people call me, but then a lot of it is very intuitive, I feel. So I just feel that it has enhanced some of the abilities that I've already had.
Right.
But, I mean, it's definitely a journey. You know, I became interested in using the Ormus products because I'm trying to heal myself, and that's been a journey, too. I feel I've had amazing healing occur, and then yet I've felt that this last year and a half has also been a very trying time for me, too. But I think in general, a lot of people's issues are coming up because there is such drastic change, not only in our vibrational level, but where we're all going on a whole. And I hear different things from people who I know don't even use Ormus products. So I just think it's, you know, great that if you put your attention in that space, that you can achieve that much more. It makes everything seem that much more grand, if that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and one of the phrases that I've heard, too, is, you know, they say it's, you know, you're piercing the veil. You know, the as we open up to all these energies, it becomes a little bit easier to tap into those energies and those abilities. And I think some of the writings, they call it piercing the veil, you know, being able to perceive things beyond our normal five senses, so to speak.
And I also feel that I feel a connection to the people who have produced the products that I've tried also.
Absolutely.
I don't know if that has to do with, you know, energy signature or whatever, but I connection. I participated with a group of people, and we all did little things where we focused in on meditating together or healing someone or healing a situation. We did some remote viewing, and, you know, I had some good results, but then, you know, I can't say that I was 100% right. But just the experience of doing these things and putting my attention to those different tasks, I think has, you know, opened up a lot more also. And, you know, little things like that I never thought I would, things about myself, like, for instance, today, I actually was running around the house trying to get laundry done today, and I was piling it all up in the laundry area and ran back to get the phone, came back, I slipped and I fell. When I fell, my heart chakra just went, like, started going wild, and I could feel everything in my body because it was really a shock that I fell. I could feel all these energy changes, and once I sat down and focused in and relaxed, then I felt all those things smoothing out and calming down again. So I really feel that it's helped me to focus my energy and direct it to what I want it to be. I'm not great at directing it yet, but I think that if, you know, you put your mind to it, the mind is a very powerful tool when you're using Ormus.
Right.
Arlene?
Yes.
Arlene?
Yes?
Arlene, I'd like to just comment. Your voice sounds more balanced, your demeanor, and I think that that's something new for you.
Uh-huh.
I just from memory
previous
of,
conversations.
And it sounds real good.
Thank you.
Yeah, you sound sweeter and more at home inside yourself.
Thank you, Ben.
I have another question. I don't want to dominate the sphere of questions, but this is Richard again. Just curious if anyone has ever thought about making an intentional Ormus, creating, placing some water in front of them, and basically creating their own Ormus right on the spot through their intentionality.
Well, I wouldn't mind addressing that one.
Go ahead. And then
the thing is that water has memory.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, one of the ramifications of that, I reckon, is if you have an argument with someone,
mm-hmm.
throw away the coffee or the tea.
Mm-hmm.
Because that coffee or tea or whatever the drink you're having is going to hold the energy of that argument.
Okay.
Water has memory.
There's
and so when I make my Ormus, one of the reasons that it is so charged, it is so potent, it is so powerful these days, is I direct the qualities that Ormus gets by what I tell it to have. I specifically instruct my Ormus as to what its qualities are. I tell it who it is and what it is and why it is that way.
But you could do that in the middle of a heated argument with the water, the same water, and say, okay, now I'm going to change you.
Yeah, you could.
Yes.
But you have to be specific about those changes. And
focus your intention on whatever that specific thing is.
Yeah.
There's a really interesting book, Masaru Emoto, The Hidden Messages of Water, that's very interesting. He's done many, many experiments with freezing water and using different sounds and different words and things and giving different formations of crystals depending on, you know, like what words or symbols they put on the container and things like that. And it's just like what you're saying, you know, it's like you can influence that. And occasionally I will make specific mana for people that have particular problems they're trying to address. And of course, try to be centered. And I will just say, this is for whoever the person's name is. I say it out loud. And this is for their greatest good and for their healing. And let it be so. And go on from there. And all you can do is, you know, your intention is for the best, for the greatest good, for that individual. What you're doing is you're putting that energy directed specifically, you know, just like Dennis is saying, you know, he would tell it specifically what it is he wants to do or what he wants, you know, the outcome to be with the Ormus he's making. And there's no doubt we can influence the world around us, you know, it definitely can be very powerful. You know, it might not always work, but what I'm coming to is, occasionally I'll have someone that is very, very ill and, you're trying to help them. And several occasions it's been people that are in very late stages of terminal cancer. And, sometimes the hardest part to grasp, I guess, is that, well, some of the psychics and other healers will tell you, when it's your time to go, it's time to go.
Right.
If it's not your time to go, it's not time to go. But I forgot exactly where I was going with this, but, I mean, when I run into a situation like that, then, you know, you make a little bit more of a specific effort in that process. And basically, you know, you let the cosmos do its thing, so to speak. You know, I don't profess to be some great healer or anything like that. The whole thing is that we're working with these quantum energies, and, you know, the whole idea is to benefit ourselves and the world around us, which includes everyone. And it comes back to, you know, you want your intent in there. It's like if I'm not feeling right or if, you know, if I'm not in what I feel like is a proper mood, then I won't make mana. You know, when I feel inspired, or if something hits me and it's like, or I just feel like the time is right, or the moon phase is right, or something, you know, something clicks. Then while you're in that frame of mind, while you're in that energetic state, that's a good time to do it. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's another reason why I was kind of laid back for a little while, and things are changing and turning back around again, and that's why I'm becoming more active in doing this and sort of crawling out of the dungeon, so to speak. But you know, it a lot of it does come back to we're dealing with all these energies, and there is, you know, it's sort of spread throughout, you know, the consciousness. Next. I guess I made my point there.
Yeah.
I was having a little bit of a energetic rush going on there for a moment.
Stephen?
Yes.
This is Mike in Palm Desert. What is your experience with vortexes and changing the elements of Ormus through a vortex, such as in a blender, something like that? Because I've read where these vortexes and tornadoes actually change time and space while this is going on, and I just wondered what your theory is on vortexes and Ormus.
Okay. This is... see if I can shorten this down. Kind of comparing it to like a black hole in space, that's a type of vortex. I think it's where energy and the condensed energy that's in the material forms transform, and I presume somehow go, you know, into the different dimensions within different universes or within the cosmos. And that vortex energy, I think, is similar to what we're doing when we're vortexing. And it, you know, obviously it there's a increased energy, and that magnetic field has a lot to do with it, because, well, like supposedly, you know, like a black hole in space, you know, is this incredible amount of gravitational force. If you look at a picture of a tube torus, and you have like it's like a little hole at the top and one at the bottom, and let's say this thing is spinning, just like a high-spin state. The energies are circulating and radiating back and forth, you know, every which way, every direction you can imagine. If you put this into like a, you know, a multi-dimensional state instead of just a picture on a paper. And so there's all these energies are starting to come into play, and I guess that's kind of a way to try to explain it. But I guess it's still sort of vague, but, I mean, you know, we still have a lot more to learn about that.
Well, I guess another question I would have you made Ormus using a vortex theory or any type of equipment that does a vortex?
Yes. I got a container. I took a round HDPE gallon-sized container and cut the top off, and put the magnets a little bit above the bottom around the sides. The one I've got right now has 8 magnets attached, and then I put another layer of HDPE plastic around that so that metal would not come in contact with the magnets, and then I put a metal shield around it, and then put foil around that, so you're making a very basic, I think they call it Fresnel cage, and I use I've got a small drill press with a stirrer that, of course, goes down in the center, and you start running this and let it start charging your whichever source material, you know, whether it's your Great Salt Lake water or Dead Sea solution, whichever. Let that run for an hour or so to start charging, and then start making the mana. And I just started doing this actually about 3 weeks ago. So I'm still haven't come to any specific conclusions yet. But you know, like when I was a child, I would play in the creeks or play in a pond, and like you can stir the mud, you know, and you can make it roll downhill, or you can swirl it, and it makes the little looks like little tornadoes. I used to be fascinated with that. And I think it's kind of trying to show you something about nature that you could sort of at least visualize and try to apply on to a grander scale, or you know, from different perspectives. But the idea about doing that is that you're charging it, and hopefully I guess you might say activating the subtle oils and other compounds that are in your solution, as well as the ormus. I mean, there's, you know, we have all these wonderful components that are in the source materials, and basically, you know, we're trying to increase the energy trying to in some way, you know, having more of a interface with the quantum field that's there. I guess that's one way to put it.
Yeah.
Well, it's experiencing those states, right? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah. Hopefully you're trying to create a higher resonance of energy that you can sort of connect with, I guess. And
well, I'm wondering, does it make any difference which way the vortex spins? I haven't read anything on that, and of course people use blenders, and I'm assuming that's a clockwise spin. I haven't really looked at it yet, but I'm wondering if there's a difference in the quality of the ormus if it's a left-hand spin or a right-hand spin.
Yes, and I think someone was mentioning something about whether you were north of the equator or south of the equator. So that's a good question. I really don't have an answer for that. I know a lot of people in the metaphysics and stuff prefer a clockwise spin, and I don't consider either one to necessarily be going forwards or backwards. That is a very good question. It's something to think about. You know, it's worth pondering, let's put it that way.
Probably an experiment that needs to be done.
Well, if the person can actually see energy coming in, the spin has to do with the way it's coming down and coming in. So coming down to the right, it's descending. If it's going the other way, it could be ascending.
Yeah, and even the shape of your stirring mechanism can, you know, have an effect on how it agitates, you know, the spin. So, yeah, or if you're able to perceive colors, you might even be able to, the color, you know, if you can perceive colors of the energy, then you might be able to perceive, you know, if one direction is better than the other.
Okay, well, what is a good color then?
That's another good question. I guess, you know, if we're talking higher frequencies, I would think going closer towards
violet, huh?
I would have to, yeah. I mean, that's violet would probably be.
We don't want to have violence on this call.
But
well, the reason I say that, my son can see the colors, and I work with life force energy and frequency and that kind of thing, and so yeah, just a 0.1 or a 0.2 on the frequency changes the color. And so you're right, the size of the blade and everything, I'm sure, changes the colors, and it would be regular metaphysics, and that is your colors according to your chakras and what you're trying to do.
And interestingly enough, the color that corresponds with a lower frequency brainwave state, where you're going into the theta delta, seems to be that purple color, and other colors, which are considered to be lower frequency colors, are associated with a higher frequency brainwave. So there might not be any direct one-to-one correlation.
I think the word is experiment then.
There you go.
Exactly.
I personally feel the colors that are the higher frequencies now are kind of like neon colors, turquoise, lime green, pink, And, of course, well, purple is the higher chakra color, but gold, silver, those colors are all good healing colors. Turquoise.
That was another interesting thing was color therapy in your diet was another one, something that someone had brought up, which I thought was interesting. This one lady called it color therapy, you know, a variety of your vegetables and things, as well as your green leafy vegetables, but she believed that that also has some effect on your physiology, which, you know, they also signify different minerals and components that are in the vegetables. So, I mean, in a way, you're consuming a wider range of nutrients. But it made sense to me, you know.
Well, we've been on this call, some of us, for almost 3 hours. And I think we're probably getting to a point where we start winding down.
Let me just remind you of something, guys, about the eclipse tomorrow. Now, the eclipse tomorrow happens, in Pacific time, around about 9 or 10 p.m. in the evening. So you will not see the moon getting in the way of the sun from our point of view. Because when the moon's getting in the way of the sun, visually, or in other words, a solar eclipse, then it's got to be daytime. But it's a powerful time metaphysically. And one astrologer sent me a little note that she said, the new moon eclipse demands physical expression. Set yourself a new physical challenge with one eye on the safety requirements. Complete it. Inspired action is called for. Mars is on his way to meeting with the soulful Neptune. The best way to get something done is to do something you really believe in. And Pluto is also involved because the sun is exactly square to Pluto tomorrow, which is.
And we're very close to the vernal equinox.
Yeah, and it is very close to the equinox, and that's 2 days away, and the vernal equinox effectively is the crossover between one season and another, and in this case Pisces Aries, when you hit 0 degrees Aries, and so the equinoxes and the solstices are the powerful times on the astrological calendar, and the powerful times in whether you believe in astrology or not in terms of the energetic function, and so particularly because Pluto is currently around about, or has just gone past the place in the zodiac where supposedly the central sun is from our point of view, and the central sun is considered to be not so much a sun, more like a big black hole that an enormous amount of energy seems to be contained. And so therefore this particular eclipse at 28 degrees in Pisces, if you've got any other planets at 28 degrees in Pisces or opposed to it in Virgo or square to it in Gemini or Sagittarius, this is a very strong time for you to access any part of your life that's associated with these planetary positions. If you've got any astrological background, you'll be able to translate what I just said. In other words, it's a time to start taking action towards the things that you want to manifest, to realize, to bring into being, to bring into manifestation, because the new moon is about starting things. The new moon is about getting things kicked off.
Plant your seeds. And
yeah.
Yes, that came to me just the other day. Yeah, it's that time, yeah.
So it's a very powerful time. It's not often you get a full moon or a new moon right up against an equinox, especially if it's an eclipse, especially if it's totally square to the position of the central sun in our whole 3-4D existence. So it's a powerful time, and put some time aside to do some intentioning, incanting, if you've got any favorite power spots worked out, go there, make your intention, tell your universe how you want it to be, how you insist it's going to be, how it is going to be, and lo and behold, it will tend to manifest. Yep. That's my little astro speech for the day.
It's a particularly good time to employ the law of attraction.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way,
yeah.
With all of the volcanism in the southwest, you get a great deal of traction on the lava there. And I think that lava also gives us traction in manifesting what we want. So that's my take on the law of attraction.
Ah, the lava attraction.
Lava attraction.
Of course. Isn't that a Hawaiian thing?
Yeah, it works in Hawaii too, but the southwest is great. Well, we'll see if you can get some. We can get you some lava source material, Steve, and increase your attraction.
Okay.
Besides that, it's paramagnetic, so that's attractive as well.
Oh yeah, yes, definitely. Sounds wonderful.
All right, guys. Well, let's consider it a day. It's a day.
It's a day.
Thanks a lot.
So I'm going to go forth and continue and have a great day. And it's been great to connect with you guys. And I haven't worked out who the next guest is just yet, but I'm going to do it in sufficient advance notice this time because I had a couple of guests go sideways that I wanted to interview, but for this one. So thank you for being able to be here on the short notice. And we'll catch you on the live alchemy in a couple of weeks.
Okay, sounds great.
Thanks.
All right, guys. Ciao.
All right.
See ya.
Goodbye, Stephen. Goodbye, Dennis. Goodbye, Barry and everybody. Enrique signing off.
Thank you, okay. Stephen.
Bye, Enrique.
Bye, and everyone have a wonderful evening or day, as it may be.